All right, everybody, we're back. It's the Jaguar Journal. Good morning. I'm Perry White. Glad to have you guys with us, man, as we get things rocking and rolling. Good morning to everybody listening on Talk 107.3 FM live across the Baton Rouge Capital City area. And everybody watching on our YouTube Live, Twitch TV Live. We're live everywhere on Instagram, on X right now, Facebook. You can follow us on all of those, man, and keep up with the Jaguar Journal currently. And good morning to everybody watching there and in the comment sections and everything else, man. Hey, great part of the show right here, and I'm looking forward to this discussion of being able to talk of the news that came out this week about the SWAC and moving forward. And let me first introduce our guest this morning, man. First, we got to get my man, Dr. Travian Scott. I know Dr. Scott going to get me, but I'm just going to simply say athletic director at Grambling State University. Good morning, Dr. Scott.
Good morning, Pierre. How's it going?
Good. Does that work for you if I just say that?
Yeah, it works.
Okay.
Works fine. Absolutely.
And also my man, Zach McKinnell from FCS Football Central. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, man. And good morning, Dr. Scott.
Hey, good morning, Zach. How's it going?
Great, great.
All right, fellas, this is a discussion I want to have because first I want to get clarification for anybody out there that is listening because this news broke basically yesterday or the day before yesterday, and it started to circulate and people had questions about it, and now we get a chance to have conversation about it. And the news is the SWAC has decided to stop scheduling non-Division I and non-Division II football opponents. The SWAC membership has voted to eliminate non-D1 and non-D2 football opponents from conference schedules beginning with the 2027 football season. Dr. Scott, I want to start with you because this was voted upon. What does this mean, and how did this conversation, one, begin as members started to vote and said, all right, let's change our direction?
So I'd like to start by saying I'm a huge supporter. You know, if I recall, it actually started as just a conversation and turned into an action item. So it was heavily supported by the athletic directors, vice presidents, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, and went through unanimous. You know, I think it means a lot. You know, I kind of read the press clippings and the opinions and the Monday morning ADs and commissioners, and I get it. The fact of the matter is we've got to improve our strength of schedule. Now, there's one little caveat. That I don't think was mentioned. If you have a current agreement with a non-NCAA D1 or D2 institution, then you can play those games. So, you know, we're not, you know, placing our institutions in a space where they have to buy themselves out of already previously existing agreements. You can go ahead and play those games up until a certain point. All right. And so, you know, past 2027, we'll only play against NCAA Division I or NCAA Division II opponents, and that's every SWAC school, not just what we would call blue bloods, not just, you know, the defending champions, but everybody. And so, you know, it's going to improve our strength of schedule. It's going to give us an opportunity for the non-Celebration Bowl attendee to possibly get an FCS playoff bid. I think it's important. You see that kind of in the league now with basketball, where parity is just, it's just gotten to the point to where, you know, the league is strengthening, right? And so you can see, you know, teams are starting to get better. You know, the competition is starting to get stiffer and the margin of error is starting to get slimmer. And so with that, obviously you want to play a better brand of opponent to give yourself an opportunity to take your program as far as you can. And so that was a thought. Like I said, it started just as an information item, general conversation, and quickly morphed into an action item. And if I recall correctly, because I think this was in December when we had this conversation, it went through unscathed. So, you know, all 12 ADs, vice presidents supported it. You know, we're excited about it. Gives us an opportunity to continue to grow this league, to continue to grow viewership, to continue to grow our bases, to continue to grow our brands as a collective. And we're excited, certainly, about that.
Zach, I come to you now looking on the grand scheme of FCS football. Aside from the SWAC, how often do you see these type of matchups of the teams that the SWAC is ultimately eliminating from these schedules? How often do you see that on the grand scale of FCS football?
I mean, way less common. But, I mean, there's a few times that it's happened. Like Idaho State played Lincoln last year after one of their out-of-conference series fell through. You saw Stephen F. Austin, I believe, played a non you know, a non-Division I, non-Division II team. But it happens very rarely. You mostly see FCS teams playing non-D1 or D2 opponents in the Pioneer League. But I'll be honest with you, with both of you guys, like, that's kind of overlooked because the Pioneer League is a non-scholarship FCS league. Mm-hmm. So that's all the basketball-focused schools that are just have football as D1 so they can go to the NCAA tournament. They really do not care about football outside of maybe St. Thomas, who just moved up. But that's really the only times you see it, Perry. A lot of the times, I mean, because like right now, you know, with North Dakota State moving up, all the Missouri Valley teams had to find an extra game, Perry. And South Dakota State's been very vocal on, Perry, they've offered well above their normal rate to a bunch of FCS schools to play them and been told no because they're trying to avoid just playing a D2 opponent. So, like, that shows you at near the top of the FCS, like, you literally try everything you can not to play a non-Division I opponent. And, you know, sometimes with just the way the schedule falls or – and I'm sure Dr. Scott knows this better than anyone. Sometimes you just have an out-of-conference agreement that gets shifted or canceled, and then sometimes you just have to pivot, and the only option is one of these teams that are now banned for, or that SWAC teams are banned from playing. So sometimes it's just a matter of coincidence and just, you know, happenstance, or, you know, sometimes teams are scared of competition, Perry, and that's another conversation to have.
Yeah, you know, Southern University this year taking on Louisiana Christian. Last year, Magnese actually played them, and so now Southern with them on the schedule just snuck in and got them in. But, Dr. Scott, I ask you, how did we end up in this this pass-around, I'm going to call it, of the Virginia Lynchburgs, the Lincolns? I saw Westgate last year on UAPB's schedule. Alcorn taking on Arkansas Baptist this year. How did we kind of fall into this realm of these schools and then kind of – these schools became our pass-around, sort of, if I want to put it that way.
Not the pass-around. Okay. Hey, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. You know, I've been making schedules, football schedules, for 14 or 15 years. And, you know, if my memory serves me correctly, the only non-D1s that I've ever scheduled was maybe Langston. I don't know if you remember the Langston game down in Baton Rouge.
I definitely remember.
The lightning interruption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're still mad about that one.
That was a good game, actually.
Yeah, and listen, as ADs, right, you try to schedule games to kind of prepare your team, right, for different reasons. Like, sometimes you want to prepare your teams to teach them how to win games. Sometimes you have younger teams. Sometimes you have more inexperienced teams, and so sometimes when you schedule. Now, our scheduling model is 2 to 3 years out, and, you know, obviously there are several factors. How many home games, what's the budget, the impact on the budget in terms of forecasting, you know, where do we feel our team is? Obviously 2 to 3 years out, you can't really predict that. We try to, you know, schedule – you know, with other things in mind, mainly the fans. Like, who do our fans want to see out of conference? You know, I know that if I have a game, and no disrespect to VUL, but my folks aren't coming to watch Virginia Lynchburg, right? Like, mm-hmm. they'll come to watch a Miles or a Clark Atlanta, right? Because there's an interest in the team. There's regional interest. We've got a huge base in Atlanta that'll follow basically the visiting team here. There's an attraction with the bands, right? All a part of the game day atmosphere. So that makes sense for us. Or, you know, something like a Kentucky State where, you know, the head coach is basically from the state, right? And so there's some tie-in that makes the game interesting. It makes it worth, quite frankly, purchasing the ticket and maybe even spending one night or two nights stay in the hotel for. And so that's kind of how we model those things. We try to be intentional about it. We try to really not think just about the team. Obviously, the team is first and foremost, but you got to be able to do it in a way that makes sense. Now, you know, it's a copycat league, man. You know, when one person sees something, then here we go, right? And then I think you coined it as a pass around. But that happens. We play Kentucky State this year. I think they'll be down in Baton Rouge. We played Kentucky State last year. I think they'll be down in Baton Rouge this year. I think you said Louisiana Christian was in Lake Charles playing McNeese last year. They're Banners this year. And so, yeah, you see that. You know, once a school kind of sees it, and they're just like us, just at a lower level, right? When mm-hmm. when we go to Ohio State and come back with $1 million check, you know, they come from Baton Rouge and come back with a sizable amount of money that they otherwise wouldn't be able, of course, to deposit in their football budgets or their general funds. And so it supports their programs the same way when we go to a TCU or a Georgia or Ohio State or LSU, like, you know, it's the same hat. And so, you know, the only difference is that those institutions aren't classified as NCAA. They're either NAIA or some other independent league. And for us, it was just important that, you know, those games kind of stay within NCAA bounds to so that they don't affect the strength of schedule. It gives our teams the best possible outcomes when it comes to strength of schedule to be able to, again, possibly play in the playoffs and continue to rise and heighten the league, right? What's the old saying? The rising tide lifts all boats. And so, you know, you go back last year and you look at a very good Prairie View team that comes out of nowhere and plays a Jackson team in the championship that people sort of expected to be there, right? Well, you know, kind of on the heels of that was a very solid Alabama State team.
Mm-hmm.
And they won 10 games, right? But because of the strength of schedule, you know, they kind of fell out of consideration pretty early for a playoff bid. And so, you know, it's important at that point for all three of those institutions, you know, the one who ended up going to the Celebration Bowl, the one that ended up hosting the SWAC championship game, and the next best opponent that won 10 games in a very tough league to be able to get their just due. And so, you know, strength of schedule is a huge part of that, and so that's why that change was made.
Zach, let me ask you on the FCS side, and especially you being a voter and then looking at considerations of the playoffs of at-large bids of teams. And, you know, in that rare case, Florida A&M just a few years ago, was that rare case the first time in decades that a SWAC team ultimately became eligible and got into the FCS playoffs, in which Florida A&M came to Louisiana and they took on Southeastern. But looking at that, when you look at just being a voter and then looking at the committee when they're looking at bringing in those, you know, at-large bids, how important is out-of-conference scheduling? And when you look at the Virginia Lynchburgs and the Lincolns, what does that rank when they say, well, all right, let's break down the schedule? No, they have these teams. Does that pretty much, when you see those teams put you out of contention, how does that work on that end?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big factor, Perry. And I do want to make it clear to everyone, until Alabama State stops playing the Turkey Day Classic, they literally cannot go to the playoffs, even if they go 11-1 and their only loss is to a Jackson State who goes undefeated. Because the Turkey Day Classic is literally 2 days before the playoffs start. So until they get rid of that, I mean, that's not even a conversation for Bama State. And it's like, it's the same thing with the Bayou Classic. Grambling and Southern can never go to the playoffs because of the Bayou Classic. And so I think that also changes the conversation too, was because those three teams really and truly don't have to schedule for an opportunity at the playoffs, right, Perry? Your mm-hmm. season ends unless you make the SWAC championship. But I think that's why you saw PV schedule the way they did, right? Because if PV doesn't make the SWAC championship, let's say they go 10-2 next year. And, but you know, since we got Dr. Scott on, we'll say Grambling wins the SWAC West. Well, now if PV's 10-2 with the out-of-conference schedule they had with Stephen F. Austin, Tarleton, and what is it, East Texas A&M as well on that schedule, they're probably going to the playoffs, guys, depending on, you know, who they lose to and everything like that. So I think that's important. But, period, the strength of schedule debate is always a big thing. And, you know, what's funny is people always try to make it a SWAT conversation, Perry. Man, go – and I don't know how much you guys pay attention to FCS football, but, like, go ask the Southland fans how they feel about it, man. Southeastern Louisiana was crucified last year before the playoffs, before they went in, and they won, like, 9-10 games as well. And there was a lot of people saying they shouldn't get in. Harvard was 9-2, and they got – just destroyed in the pre-playoff process for their strength of schedule. So this is a thing that affects all teams, and I think you have to be real intentional with how you schedule. And I'm going to be honest, I think this is a really, really good step. But to be honest with you guys, if we're going to have an honest conversation about strength of schedule, the SWAC needed to go a step further, in my opinion. Because the FCS fought tooth and nail to get a 12-game schedule approved. Their SWAC teams next year are playing 9 Division I games. They're playing 2 Division II games. And listen, Dr. Scott, it's his schedule too. Grambling's got 3 bye weeks and 2 non-Division I games. But then you got a team like PV who's playing 12 Division I opponents. Perry, how did you compare 9 Division I games to 12 Division I games in the same conference? I think the SWAC needs to take it a step further and say, listen, you get your 1 non-D1 game, but everyone has to play 12 games, and everyone needs to play at least 11 Division I games if we're going to have a 12-game schedule.
And Dr. Scott,
can I jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
So one AD's pleasure is not that of the other. We play who we want to play. So NCAA rules only mandates that you play a certain amount of games, and it's not 12. So as a vice president and as an athletic director, I'm going to schedule based on what's best for my team. I think we explained that earlier. So conference rules, so understand this about the SWAC. The SWAC is about the membership. So if you're saying the SWAC needs to force teams to play, the SWAC won't do that. They can't do that. The members have to vote on that. All right. And so it's just like any other organization is comprised and composed of its members and thereby needs a majority vote. So just wanted to point that out. The second thing is, as a SWAC baby and a native of Baton Rouge and a vice president at an institution and an alum of another, the Bayou Classic ain't going nowhere.
Oh, yeah, no.
All right.
FCS,
FBS, ABC, I'll see you Thanksgiving weekend. All right? That's not going to change. And so we understand those things. We also need to understand what the financials look like in terms of the FCS playoffs, and they're non-existent. And so we could say that they need, the SWAC needs to do this and the SWAC needs to do that, but you need to understand the lineage of the SWAC budget sheet. And so when I look at a budget sheet, I'm pivoting toward the Bayou Classic, not toward the FCS playoffs. Now, if Alabama State wants to do that, go for it. We support it. If Prairie View wants to play 12 games against LSU, they have that right. We're not.
Let me ask, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we come back on the other side. We'll continue the conversation because I got a question that ties back into it that I really want to get from you guys as well. So for everybody out there listening, I got my man, Dr. Travian, Scott Avlag, Director of Grambling State, my man, Zach McKenna, FCS Football Central. We're talking about the new rule put into place of the SWAC now taken away from those non-NCAA games. And we're going to continue more of the conversation. Let's get ready to take a break. Y'all stay tuned. More of the Jaguar Journal. All right, everybody, we're back. It is the Jaguar Journal. Good morning. Glad to have you guys with us. I'm Perry White. Good morning to everybody listening on Talk 107.3 FM across the Baton Rouge Capital City area and everybody watching on our lives on YouTube, Instagram, X, Facebook. Glad to have you guys. And good morning. I'm joined by my man, Dr. Travian Scott Avlag, director at Grambling State. Good morning, Dr. Scott.
Hey, good morning.
And my man.
Y'all are going to get me in trouble, my 10-year-old FaceTiming.
And my man Zach McKenna, FCS Football Central. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, man.
All right, now we're having this conversation because, of course, the SWAC implementing a rule moving forward with non-NCAA opponents on the schedule will be eliminated. And Dr. Scott, going back to what Zach was talking about with the scheduling, will that now open up to where does this create conversation of the SWAC increasing conference games, especially in a sense of, like, we're seeing Southern and Alabama State over the past couple of years, and we saw it with Southern and Valley last year, using them as an example of playing conference games as non-conference games. Will we start to see that increase most likely around the conference?
I mean, you could. Uh-huh. Again, I think it's a matter of preference. you know, sometimes it plays to your benefit. I know we did it a couple times, maybe a year or two ago before Jackson State rolled on the schedule. And so, you know, 2022, I think it may have been Shedeur Sanders' first year. You know, we traveled to Jackson and played them. And so I can see that, but more along the lines of preserving rivalries on my end and less about just filling a scheduling gap.
Zach, when I look at this on the FCS side, man, and also when you're talking about guys – trying to get drafted, level of competition. And now that you see this non-NCAA games now being pretty much wiped off the schedule, what do you now look at when you say not only just strength of schedule, but now the competitive nature of it, of getting guys into the league?
Yeah, the scouts don't even turn on that film. They don't turn on the film when Grambling plays Langston. They don't turn on the film when PV plays Lincoln. So those games aren't even, like, there's nothing to take away from those games for scouts. And, like, our guy Gerald Huggins, who does a lot of NFL work for us, especially on the HBCU side, will tell you that. I mean, they're just not going to turn that game on. And so I think replacing those games with a D1 game will be really, really beneficial. And, like, again, I'm not a huge fan of going to play big P4 schools either, Perry. I mean, like, I get it. Like, you get your roster beat up. But just having a solid Division I opponent on that side, in that spot, would be way more beneficial than having a non-NCAA opponent. I do want to make one clarifying point, because with my last comments as well, is like, I wasn't calling for the Magic City Classic or the Bayou Classic to move, but we keep having these conversations about every team preparing for the playoffs with three of the better teams historically in the SLAC can't even go. So I think it's more of a conversation period. That's what I was trying to get at. Having 12 games and 11 D1 games would help television and the fan interest, because Perry, which game is going to draw more fans for Southern, even though y'all are playing one at a neutral site? Is the Bama State game bigger, or are y'all real hyped for Louisiana Christian this year coming to Baton Rouge?
Me personally, I'm not, but
that was my only point. I want to talk about moving the Bayou Classic. I'm just saying we should have a, like, there's got to, like, I wish the SWAC ADs would come together and find a way to level out the scheduling a little bit, because it is a little ridiculous. You got one contender playing 12 D1 opponents and another one playing 9. That was my only point there. So I did want to make that clarifying point, that it wasn't anything about making the playoffs or moving two legendary games. It was, there shouldn't be one team in the conference playing 12 D1s and another one playing 9.
Dr. Scott, how did we get there?
Where's there exactly?
I guess it's this idea of everybody on the same page that he's saying. Is there an option or a possibility to get it? Because I know you said what works for one AD and one institution may not work for another.
I think it's a conversation. I've long had a policy that kind of started with Dawson Odoms down in Baton Rouge. I don't schedule games that my coach doesn't approve.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if I go to Mickey and Mickey says he doesn't want to do it, then that opens up another conversation, right? And mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say, well, Prairie View is doing this, so you have to. Like, that doesn't work that way. I know Anton Goff really well, and I think the world of Tremaine Jackson, I know him very well, and I think that those guys, you know, got together and decided that that's what they wanted to do, because that's what's best for their program. And so, you know, whether or not they play 12 D1s and, you know, the school up the river plays, you know, 8 SWAC schools and a D2, like, eventually it's going to level the playing field when they play in conference. But that's solely their prerogative to be able to schedule the games that they want. Again, with different teams have, different objectives and goals when it comes to football. Some teams is FCS playoffs. Some teams is Celebration Bowl, right? Some teams is to generate X amount of revenue to support their programs. And so, you know, everybody's goal is not the same. So everybody's scheduling philosophy shouldn't be the same either. We've played the East Texas A&Ms in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. We went to their place and beat them. They came to our place. We beat them again. But we've also played Kentucky State. But we've also played Ohio State, LSU, and going to TCU. So, you know, it's for me, it's more, I take a more measured, balanced approach. We got 3 bye weeks by design, not because we had to, we wanted to, but that came in consultation with Mickey Joseph and, you know, how he felt his team would best be prepared to play. And so, you know, as the person and people responsible for moving this program forward, we've got to take that into account. And that doesn't always align with what another institution wants to do as well. So just wanted to kind of lift that up, so that we can have some clarity and understanding there.
And I got a question. How much does it normally cost a team in the SWAC to play one of these non-NCAA teams like the Virginia Lynchburg, the Lincolns, the Westgate Star? I know it varies, but in what ballpark does that normally come off of a check that we're writing to one of those programs?
You know, high five to low six figures.
Okay. So this, when in the grand scheme of these things, because I'm pretty sure those schools was probably making frantic calls. I don't know if they was trying to lobby. If I was them, I would have been lobbying my butt off trying to get you guys not to do this. But now, how does this, in your opinion, now affect those schools who, like a Virginia Lynchburg, they pretty much at one time seemed like they was almost an at-large member of the SWAC, as many SWAC teams that they had played in Lincoln. So how does this affect them on the backside now that they can't get these guaranteed games anymore?
Well, I would often ask the question, how did it benefit them? Because I don't think that schools were paying what I just quoted you to them when they were playing, considering the distance that they have to travel.
Yeah.
I don't think they went home with anything. Right, like again, when listen, I'm a numbers guy, so you know I'm wondering how you get from Virginia. I know you know basically a baseline ballpark amount of you know buses, meals, rooms, right? Are you bringing a band? That's a whole other story, right? And so if you're getting $50,000, $60,000, $75,000, you're gonna take 20 home. Like, is it really worth that? Right? And so you know to that point. You know, maybe there was, you know, some other type of institutional support that they had. Maybe the coach's mission was to, you know, play as many D1 opponents as possible. I don't know. I can't tell you what they're thinking. But what I can tell you is, you know, this will directly, while it may directly negatively impact non-D1s, NAIAs, you know, those schools, it will definitely benefit the D2 space. Specifically the SIAC and the CIAA. And so, you know, the Tuskegees, the Miles of the world, the Lane Colleges of the world, the Clark Atlantas of the world, the Kentucky States, the Central States of the world, the Bowie States even, right? You could kind of see that coming. The Albany States, the Fort Valleys. You kind of see that those relationships are really getting ready to start kind of moving in a way where now they're going to see themselves, you know, on SWAC TV or on ESPN Plus or on HBCU Go as an opponent of a SWAC team, because now that's going to be our pivot. You know, when I talked earlier about interesting rivalries and interesting competition and games that your folks want to see, right? Like, you're going to want to see Southern Grambling. You're going to want to see Bama State A&M. You're going to want to see Texas Southern Prairie View. You're going to want to see, you know, Grambling Jackson, you're going to want to see Southern Jackson, Grambling Fam, Southern Fam. Like, you're going to want to see those games. But outside of those games, in a non-homecoming format, we really struggle with being able to schedule opponents that people want to see, right? So when you alluded to the in-conference, out-of-conference games or the out-of-conference, in-conference games, whatever that terminology is, it has to be something that our fans want to see. And so I may play one school, but not play another. And I'm not going to name those schools because I don't want to disrespect anybody. Right. And so, you know, in a lot of instances, there may be more of a benefit for me to go play a SIAC or a CIAA school than it would be to play a conference game for out of conference purposes. Make sense?
Yeah. And I guess, would you look at if it's at home, if it's a non-conference versus a conference versus against a team in the SWAC, what's more beneficial to your Gates? Would it be that type of matchup, or would it be a D2 matchup, as you said, naming the SIAC and those other conferences?
Well, it depends. It depends on your overhead, right? You go pay the D2 school, you may have to pay them a game guarantee. I've even seen where some SWAC AD, SWAC to SWAC out of conference have paid game guarantees, mm-hmm. right? So there's that. Then you've got the overhead of being able to operate a home game, right? Security, ushers, ticket takers, lot attendance, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of the costs associated with hosting the game. And I could tell you where we run, but you wouldn't want to hear that. But it's a very healthy number, right? And so, you know, you have to be able to be able to sell enough tickets to know your break-even point. It's really just simple finance at the end of the day. Some people say it's accounting. I call it finance because it's all encompassing, right? And so you have to know, you know, as a businessman, how many tickets you have to sell to get to a certain point, right? What do the ticket sales convert to in terms of parking? And then what can you do outside of the season ticket space? So the actual general admission game by game single game model. So what do you have there to be able to have those folks who don't have season tickets to be able to show up? And then you've got to price it appropriately. And so when you create all of that modeling, that then could tell you where you stand with certain opponents and how they travel to certain institutions.
Zach, let me ask you this. When you look at even the D2, I know I asked about the non-NCAA opponents across FCS, but now when you look at D2, what is that in the grand scheme of FCS? How often are you seeing those D2 matchups? And you see with the SWAC, it's typically going to the SIAC, CIAA, somewhat between the SWAC and the MEAC of taking on those D2 schools. But on the other end, what D2 schools are you seeing taking on FCS teams?
Yeah, I mean, well, to be fair, I don't see many top D2 teams coming to play FCS schools. And I think they kind of, you know, Perry, there's a reason that some of the top FCS schools struggle to find, like, P4 money games or FBS money games. You know, like you saw North Dakota State not be able to find a FBS game for, like, 7 years after they beat Kansas State. There's a reason for that. Like, no one's going to seek out Ferris State or Grand Valley State, right? Because they know what would probably happen if they scheduled those games. I think most of the D2 games are in the South region, and I say that because you have the SWAC and MEAC. You get a few D2 games in the Southland as well. Like, you'll see, like, a Stephen F. Austin play, like, a Sewell State, or, you know, a Lamar maybe play one. But the Southland's kind of taking the same approach that the SWAC is, where they're trying to get rid of those non-NCAA games and non-Division I games. So we'll see how that comes along. And then you'll occasionally get one elsewhere across the FCS, Perry, if, like, an out-of-conference series falls through. Like, 2 years ago, Stanford and Incarnate Word fell through because of an FCS game, had to be moved to a different week. Well, Incarnate Word and Stanford both had to schedule non-D1 opponents because the series fell through in, like, May, and it was just too late to find another game. But outside of that, like I said, the Pioneer League plays a lot of non-D1 games, and those are just the non-scholarship schools. They don't care, Perry. Their conference winner gets an auto bid. The playoffs, they historically always lose in the first round by a significant amount. And guess what they're focused on? They're getting their basketball team ready for the NCAA tournament. So I really don't count them. But I think the D2 games have lessened across the FCS space over the past 2 years, which is good because with the 12-game schedule, you see a lot more conferences trying to get matchups. We see it in college basketball all the time, right, Perry? I think the SWAC had one with the Pac-12 in basketball, mm-hmm. where a bunch of SWAC teams played a bunch of Pac-12 teams. The SEC had one with the Big 12 at the FBS, level in basketball. And the Big Sky Missouri Valley signed one. I know the Southland's been vocal about finding a conference to do something like that with. And I think it promotes really good out-of-conference scheduling. And I think those teams should be rewarded for that come FCS playoff time. So we'll see if that becomes a trend later on.
And that's what, to Dr. Scott, to you, I would love to see more Southland versus SWAC. And I know Southern, Grambling, Prairie View, and Texas Southern, the four teams I know for sure that typically will take on a Southland team. You can sprinkle in Alcorn State right there along as well, Valley as well, you know. But to see what would it look like as these matchups more with FCS conferences within our own footprint and not just the Southland, but maybe the ASUN and the other conferences, what would that look like moving forward? Is that something, a possibility on the table, looking at these FCS, the FCS conference, non-conference matchups?
My fans don't want to see that. I'm sorry. I mean, you've been around me for a long time. My fans don't want to see that. And I'll be honest with you. Again, I've got a lot of experience with this. And, as Grambling AD, I hate to keep mentioning this Southern, but I'm going to draw back on experience. Many years ago, during the Willie Quinn days, we went to Northwestern State. I call it the Will Broussard game. And it was the third or fourth largest crowd they've ever had in the history of the institution. A year later, they didn't bring 2,500 people, right? Couple years later, we went to ULM. I remember that game for obvious reasons. There was a lot of tension on the sideline there. I think it might have been the third or fourth largest crowd they had. They won't come back to us, right? I remember we went to McNeese. I remember it was hot out there. I think it may have been the third or fourth largest crowd they've ever had. They don't return anything. And so, you know, we went down to East Texas A&M or Texas A&M Commerce or whoever they are this week, and we brought 7,000 people there. They brought none. Right? And so,
can I ask a question real quick?
You can ask.
Why is it that you think, in more particular, I guess I use Gremlin since you say your fans don't want to see it. If it's, let's say, it happens to be a top 25 FCS team, why is it on, if it comes to football, that you think the interest is not there? Is it just simply the HBCU culture? And if it ain't that, then they don't want to see it. It has, and not just good football, if it does present itself as good football?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I would just say a lot of our fans don't really know the Southland like that. And the Southland for an AD isn't, and again, I'm trying to walk a very tight line here, isn't very attractive in terms of being able to bring fans in your stadium.
Yep.
Let me just say that, okay? You know, obviously, they've got a pretty good brand of football. We don't fare too well against them, right? Mm-hmm. And by we, I mean everybody. But there's still, you know, people don't understand that they think it's sports. It's actually sports and entertainment. And so, you know, why do you think when we go places, they want our bands? Because they want to be entertained, right? And so we have that at home. And so, you know, for us, the pivot has to be to generate those revenues via ticket sales. And when you start trying to sign those reciprocal agreements, that's what you have in mind. You know what? I'm going to come and bring the crowd to you, and in return, you know, can you just sell something? 5,000, 6,000, 8,000, anything? No, let me go play Tuskegee because they'll bring everybody here, right? and so you've got to level it. And I'm not being funny. I'm being serious. Like you've got to level the competition that everybody is speaking of, right, with entertainment value, because your fans need both.
Mm-hmm.
They need both. You know, you go look at some of these little nuanced items some of these ADs have done. You know, hey, let's put the band across from each other in some of these stadiums. Hey, let's do these different things to increase and enhance the game day experience. And, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, some of those schools don't really bring and lend themselves to bringing that entertainment value. And so, yes, a good game. Yes, a competitive game. But that's just for the football fan and the football coach. There's a lot of non-fans and coaches in the stands that are watching this stuff.
And I guess, right, to your point, that would be the reason why the SWAC has led attendance in FCS for, what, 4 decades now? It's the entertainment factor. And although you get some great football, especially amongst top 25 teams across the FCS landscape, basically what you're saying, it does not create the entertainment factor the same way that the SWAC gives fans. And so regardless of maybe top 25 great football matchup, nobody's watching.
No. No. No, they're not. I mean, and again, listen, I'm a data guy. What can be measured can be managed. Look it up. Nobody wants to see it. But the average football fan,
yeah,
the football head, the three of us love it. We love it. We'll run to the TV on a Thursday and watch an ESPN game with 1,300 people in the stands because it's a big game.
Yeah. And I say, I look at the same way with Zach, you know, and you can chime in. I look at like a team like Tennessee Tech, who last year was a really good team, but in spending a lot of money towards their program, but just not a big draw.
Yeah. Smart. And when you, and I hate to do this, but when you've got a payroll of your athletes, right, and you've got to put yourself in a space where you can create interest to generate revenue, right? Then you've got to decide kind of what direction you want to pivot in and what that strategy looks like. Because it can't be just going to Ohio State and playing for $1 million. I'm telling you now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it just doesn't work that way. But but it's a part of it, right? It's a part of the overall picture, but not the picture.
Go ahead.
But you've got to be able to consider that instead of just saying, you know what, we're going to go play McNeese, we're going to play, you know, Kennesaw State, we're going to play Northwestern State, and then we're going to go play eight sweat games. Okay. Like, and two of those games could be at home, and because there's no real entertainment value, and again, no disrespect, because there's no real entertainment value, you know, in one, two, or all of those schools, then I'm only going to get the traditional fan. I'm not going to get the person there to seek the entertainment. And I'm trying to encapsulate all of those things and bring all of those types of fans.
Let me do this. Let me take a break. When we come back on the side, I'm going to let you guys get your closing remarks and get ready to close this thing out. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be back more at the Jaguar Journal. All right, everybody, we are back. It's the Jaguar Journal. Good morning. I'm Perry White. Glad to have you guys with us, man. Great conversation this morning. I'm really thoroughly enjoying it. I hate it got to come to an end due to time, man. I can sit here and talk to these guys all day, but, of course, I got Dr. Travion Scott, Athletic Director at Grambling State, and my man Zach McKinnon from FCS Football Central. I'm going to let you guys get ready to close this thing out. Zach, let everybody know where they can keep up with you, man, and continue to follow you.
Yeah, FCS Football Central on SI.com/college/FCS and the Blue Bloods on YouTube and all podcast-driven platforms, man.
Hey, Zach, man, I appreciate you coming on this morning, man. As always, you know, I enjoy the conversation. And Dr. Scott, I ain't going to do you like, you know, you may not want everybody following you, but I do appreciate you, man, coming on and having an honest conversation from a perspective of representing your program and your athletic department and then speaking on it, because the transparency that you give and the honesty, sometimes it's hard to get from the admin side when you're looking at trying to be fully honest and helping fans truly understand how this thing works.
Hey, man, you know, we just like to serve. You know, I think anytime, you know, you put yourself in a space where you're working at, you know, an institution like Grambling, you don't have a choice but be transparent. You know, it's kind of the way I was raised and kind of what we impart in our staff to challenge everything. So you can't challenge everything and not be challenged. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we try to just, you know, be upfront, honest, transparent as much as we can. Obviously, you know, when information is you know, needs to be, you know, more proprietary in nature or kept under the wraps, we do that. But, you know, we try to lead and we try to get out front and we try to get out in front of things and give our fans, our stakeholders, our investors, our donors, you know, the opportunity to really see us for who we are and be able to approach us and have honest conversations and dialogues about the state of not just our athletics program, but our institution. And, you know, that's the way President LaMelle leads. Obviously, that's the way we'll follow. I'm definitely in alignment with that leadership because I'm the same way. And so, you know, we're getting ready to actually get up and go out. We had to move our spring game because of weather this morning. And so, you know, getting ready to go out and cheer on the G-Man versus G-Man. Hopefully, you know, we get out unscathed with no injuries. But, you know, hopefully it's a great day. We've got softball at 11. We've got baseball at 11. A lot of things going on at one time because of the weather, but, you know, it's that time of year. And so, you know, hopefully we have a successful undefeated day. Obviously, G-Man versus G-Man is kind of relative, right? But for me, no injuries and really starting to turn the page into what I think will be a great ending to the 2026 spring portion of the year and a great introduction into the summer. You know, I look for us to really, really show ourselves well in the fall. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, I appreciate you fellas for coming on, man, and having this conversation, man. I truly do. Thank you, man. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Dr. Scott, man, and appreciate you fellas.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you, man.
All right, everybody, let's take a break, and I'll come back. We'll close things out. Stay tuned. More to Jaguar Journal. All right, everybody, we're back. It's the Jaguar Journal. Good morning. I'm Perry White. Glad to have you guys with us. Good morning to everybody listening on Talk 107.3 FM around the Baton Rouge capital city area. Be sure to tune in on Talk 107.3 every Saturday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. You can hear myself and many of the wonderful guests that we have here on the show each and every week. And not only that, man, be sure to keep up with the Jaguar Journal. We're live actually right now on Twitch TV, on Instagram, on X, on YouTube, as well as Facebook, and you can keep up with us on all of those along with Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's not hard to find the Jaguar Journal. I want to thank Dr. Travian Scott, Athletic Director at Grambling State, my man Zach McKenna from FCS Football Central, and Christopher Turner, the Sports Director or Director and Head Coach of Esports at Southern University, for coming on, man. We have had a great show, and I hope you guys have enjoyed it and was entertained. I hope you have a great week. The weather is beautiful thus far. I know in some places a little northern, farther north of us, going to be dealing with some severe weather. But for everybody in South Louisiana, if you're out and about, enjoy the Blues Fest today in Baton Rouge, French Quarter Fest down in New Orleans, and whatever fest that you decide to make up this weekend, I hope you guys enjoy. From myself, Perry White, my man Mike, CJ Guidry, man, thank you guys as always for tuning in and keeping up and supporting with us. Be sure to support us across all those networks. Share the show and tell a friend to tell a friend about the Jaguar Journal on Saturday mornings. And if you didn't get a chance to catch it live, or you missed a segment, or somebody else wants to hear about what happened today, just go to our YouTube channel and hit the share button. You can share it to whoever you want, whenever you want, however you want, okay? So thank you guys as always. I'll be back next week, the same time, the same place. As always, it's the Jaguar Journal. Have a great weekend, everybody.